Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this webinar on the important topic of encouraging inclusive communities. This is a key initiative for ICMA, and a very important area to figure out how to diversify and make inclusive the profession as well as the communities that the profession serves. So we're glad that you're all joining us today. We have 29 ICMA State Association coaching partners that help us in identifying topics like this, and presenters such as we have today from our participating state partners. We're also pleased to have nine ICMA outreach partners. These are organizations that help us to attract a diverse and inclusive audience, as well as to assist us in identifying presenters that reflect those audiences. So we're very thankful for all that they do. In today's session, we're going to really be talking about how local governments are working to encourage inclusive communities. This is a challenge at local government levels and across the country. And so figuring out effective ways to do that, to engage diverse segments of the community, to figure out ways to serve them effectively, is really at the core of the profession. And so we're going to be looking at innovations around doing that. We're really pleased to have an outstanding panel today of people who have practical ideas to share with you of things that have worked for them, lessons that they've learned, so the things that you might avoid, as well as valuable resources to help you in going forward. So let me just briefly introduce them. Their bios are in the agenda packet, but I want you to understand what role they're playing today and how they're going to be helping you navigate this topic. We're first going to start with Bridget Wachtel. She's the village manager in Flossmoore. That's a community of under 10,000, and she's got 57 full-time employees. So it's a small agency. We get a lot of interest from small agencies around the country, and okay, help us understand how we can do these things if we're working at a smaller scale. So she'll share with you very practical things that they've been doing to create an inclusive community. They earned an award from ICMA for their diversity and inclusion efforts, and you'll be hearing about that. But even more importantly, I think she's going to share with you a situation that arose just very recently that really sort of tore at the fabric of their inclusive community, and what she learned from it and what you can do to prepare in your community, because I think every community is just sort of a step away from something arising that can really disrupt your community and its work effectively. So we're thankful for her presentation here today, and she has a long history in the profession, a master's in public administration from Northern Illinois University. We're going to turn next to Maria Hurtado. She's the assistant city manager in Hayward, California. And she has been really working very actively in ICMA as a vice president on the ICMA board of directors around the whole issue of diversity and inclusion. Her city, Hayward, earned recognition as the California City of the Year for diversity and inclusion just this past period of time. So she's going to be sharing with you what their journey has been like, what they've learned, some valuable resources you can apply to benefit from what they've been doing, so that if you're starting on this journey in your organization, you won't have to start from scratch. You can really work off of the helpful ideas that others have already developed and adapt them as you see appropriate. She has a master's of social work from San Jose State University. And then we're going to be concluding with Preeti Sridhar. She's the Deputy Public Affairs Administrator in Renton, Washington. They have a very robust program on inclusion, and we've gotten questions about how to look at things through an equity lens and other sorts of things where people really want to delve into this in depth. And Renton has a wonderful story to share with you, a very robust set of materials on their website that she'll direct you to, a whole series of things that will help you in going forward. And she has an MBA in marketing and finance from the University of Minnesota. And I'm Don Maruska, producer and moderator for these sessions, and really appreciate the hard work that these presenters have done with me on your behalf to make this a productive session for you. So we're going to go to a polling question. We always like to know how many people are participating at each location. This is a topic in particular that lends itself to having a discussion in your organization. So we're hopeful that you've gathered groups of people. If you haven't, we encourage you to share the digital recording of this session and what you learned from it with them afterwards. And that will help you in moving forward. We're getting a question about access to the materials for today's session. They're actually in the handout section of GoToWebinar on your screen. You can click on that and download it, or you can go to the website, icma.org/coachingwebinars, and then you click on the Agenda and Archives link towards the bottom of that page, and that will take you to the agendas, and you click on agenda, and you'll get the information there. But if you're in the webinar now, no worries. You'll be able to sort through that, and we'll have the links later, and I'll be sending you the very specific link to this particular webinar and its digital recording in the follow-up email from today's session. So let's see how we did in attracting a diverse set of respondents to today's session. So I see a lot of you are attending on your own, three quarters, but groups of varying sizes. In fact, some upwards of 20. So we're pleased to have so many of you involved with us today, and that's great. I'm now going to turn the presentation over to Bridget Wachtel, the village administrator in Flossmoor, and Bridget, we're so delighted to have you, and we're going to be looking forward to hearing your story of how Flossmoor has been able to move forward.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bridget Wachtel, and I'm the village manager in Flossmoor, Illinois. I'm delighted to be with you this morning to share our community's efforts to be more inclusive. Flossmoor is located about 25 miles south of Chicago, and as a Chicago metropolitan community, the segregation and racial tensions that have plagued Chicago for years have been felt here, too. As of the last census, Flossmoor was about 50% African-American and about 50% Caucasian, although census projections show the African-American population growing. Our high school pulls students from five communities and is about 80% African-American, and as Don mentioned, we're a small community, about 9,400 residents. Our program is in its infancy and started as a result of our strategic planning and rebranding exercises in 2017. Using surveys and community input meetings, we developed this position statement that laid the groundwork for our logo design and tagline. The words welcoming, open-minded, and caring, and words like them, were often used to describe Flossmoor. What we found during both of these exercises was that our diversity was both a strength and a weakness. People chose to live in Flossmoor because of our diversity. However, we are also challenged with feelings of community tension and a lack of opportunities to connect. What you see here are actual responses to these community engagement questions. Our strategic planning survey showed similar results. Diversity was listed as the most frequent strength of the community. However, when the community commented on weaknesses, comments like change in diversity, segregation, lack of strong sense of community were included in the feedback. While the statement seemed like such a juxtaposition at the time, 2 years ago or 2 years later, it seems very clear how our diversity can be both a strength and a weakness. Diversity can mean representing the real world, increasing tolerance, and becoming a more united community, but that's not without overcoming community tensions, becoming challenged and feeling vulnerable to unfavorable opinions, and perhaps even losing residents who in other ways seem valuable to the community, but may not share your values on diversity or have the fortitude to weather the challenges. As the Village Board formed priorities in its strategic plan, they picked up on the diversity as a strength and weakness and quickly identified that the village leaders needed to work on being a more inclusive community. Our program for the past 2 years has been led by the Village Board, Community Relations Commission, and staff, and has been relatively low budget. I've identified five takeaways that I hope you glean from today's presentation, including the importance of leadership, the call to action to do something when it comes to becoming more inclusive, and own the bad moments as an opportunity to build strength and resilience. Our program, and I use that term loosely, really has three components. The first and major part of our inclusivity initiative is to connect residents to the village and to each other. We largely do that through events, personal contact, and making it as easy as possible to find the information they need about the village. Examples further include direct invites to new residents to attend special events like our annual festival, as you see here on the screen, as well as our new resident mixer. Having a welcome booth at each event, which includes information for all residents on how they can become more connected to the village. And signing people up on the spot for e-news and e-cop, two email subscriptions the village provides. We've included in the packet for you a copy of our Connect postcard that we distribute everywhere, including a new resident welcome bag. To feel connected and included in the community, people need to see themselves in the community. This is the second part of our program. We made a conscientious decision 2 years ago to use no stock images of people in our publications. We photo shoot all of our imagery and work our formal and informal networks to find a diverse and sometimes otherwise unknown group of residents. Here's a collage of photos from different events and programs that the village offers. Events immediately sound like a lot of money, but most of our events and programs are low cost, either free or somewhere between $1,000 and $10,000. For example, MLK Day of Service is all about the village playing matchmaker between organizations who need volunteers and volunteers willing to volunteer. Our website becomes the meeting spot, and on MLK Day, people are able to go volunteer through those connections. Over the past 5 years, this Day of Service has grown from 3 host locations to over 10 host locations, and in 2019, we had close to 700 volunteers. Our costs, some flyers and posters, and a part-time staff member the day of the event. We've also learned that the village doesn't have to host or own the event. We've been supporting partners in events like a St. Patrick's Day parade and Pride Party, both of which have been resident-led. We celebrate Black History Month by showcasing African American residents and business leaders' stories, again, connecting our community to each other and telling our stories. Our hashtag FlossMore365 campaign is all about tapping into Floss, into resident photographers. Share your photo with us, and we add it to our library to reuse later while residents are sharing their experiences, further connecting them to the community. The cost to the village is 12 $25 gift cards to encourage residents to participate. Being intentional with the selection of our residents on boards and commissions has been the third component of our program. This takes time and patience and legwork. Examining the diversity in race, geography, age, gender, and background to ensure true diversity on our commissions has been a goal. Sometimes simply soliciting for volunteers does not always work. It has required us using our networks within the community to reach people, including reaching out to our intergovernmental partners, such as the schools, to find out who their leaders are in trying to engage those individuals in serving on our boards and commissions. This effort has included not only our feel-good commissions like Community Relations Commission or Art Commission, but also our regulatory commissions, such as the Board of Police and Fire Commissioners, who are responsible for hiring police officers and firefighters. After initiating these three parts of our program, we decided to adopt guiding principles for diversity and inclusion as an aspirational statement of our objectives. The Village Board asked the Community Relations Commission to help with drafting this statement before it was adopted. The lesson learned here was discovered when the board members saw language written. Some were more comfortable with an aggressive reach toward inclusion than others. Words like shall and may became critical. We had to slow down, meet individually to talk it through, make compromises, meet people where they were, and really rely on the mayor and his consensus building skills to reach resolution. At the beginning of May this year, after being asked to be part of this panel, after having received an ICMA program award for our diversity and inclusion efforts, and after having felt pretty good about the strides we have made in this space, Flossmoor and Homewood Flossmoor High School was launched into the regional and national media for two racist incidents. The first occurred on a Sunday morning in which four teens from a neighboring community painted in blackface videotaped themselves driving around, which included harassing an African-American worker at a McDonald's. One was wearing an HF sweatshirt. The second occurred within 24 hours of the first and involved an older white Flossmoor resident in a road rage incident yelling the N-word to a young African-American driver. Not only were we in the news, but the social media frenzy generated hundreds of comments on a local Facebook page. The second incident resulted in a community member contacting the resident's employer, and as you see from the picture on the screen, that resident no longer works for his employer. What we quickly learned is that these types of incidents open wounds and stir a raw emotion. It can seem easier to try to push down those emotions, let it be somebody else's problem, or simply try to quickly fix it. We have taken an approach of moving forward with what has happened, which means jumping into the fray, rising up to the leadership expectations, and working with the community to heal. I've included two news links here for you to see the coverage of these incidents, and those are the first couple of bullet points on this screen. The community response quickly focused on the high school, and they deserve accolades on how they have risen to the occasion. The third bullet point here on this slide sends you to a video produced by the high school and shown to every English class within 48 hours of the event. The broadcast also allowed for on-the-air questions from students in their classrooms for the superintendent and principal to answer. The high school quickly organized parent forums to discuss how they had been working on inclusion and cultural competency and providing parents an opportunity to provide feedback on what else the school can be doing given what had occurred. The community stepped forward, and a resident who is a sociology professor has led two peaceology forums for members of the at-large community to come forward and discuss race relations. Members of our village board and staff have participated in these forums. Their role is still being developed, but moving toward serving as a hub of information and people interested in working on race relation issues in the community. We've also provided a link to our local newspaper, the HF Chronicle, who cover the incidents and the healing efforts that have followed. As a staff member, I'm thankful that our board had the foresight to see that our diversity was a strength and a weakness. Our efforts over the last 2 years have better equipped our board and staff to respond to this incident and what happened. We are still taking actions in response to what happened, including hosting community forums on race relations. From this list of actions that you see on the screen that we immediately took, two things stand out. Repeatedly having community leaders voice their recommitment to our values and how we will move forward with what has happened. And two, turning to trusted advisors like the Anti-Defamation League for help and support. Here are some easy and low-cost ways to get started. Use your existing events to connect residents to each other and your city. Host a new resident open house with your intergovernmental partners. Often, restaurants will sponsor refreshments. Use your residents as your city photographer. Take a look at who is representing your city on commissions. And use a low-cost survey instrument like SurveyMonkey to survey residents and how they feel connected and included. I've also provided you our website and a marketing video on Flossmoor. My Flossmoor lets you hear from residents and how they feel about our community, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. I'm happy to continue the conversation with anyone after the webinar. Feel free to email me at bwachtel@flossmoor.org. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Bridget. A really strong story. And I did look at the video that you're highlighting here on this slide, and it's very, very inspiring. So those of you that are laboring in the vineyards on the whole issue of diversity and inclusion, I really encourage you to take a look at that video. There's a lot of interesting material there, a lot of things that you can benefit from. We're going to go to a polling question here because we're very interested in hearing how the ideas that you heard from Bridget resonate for you and how that may be useful. We also encourage you, if you have questions, to type them in on the question function. I will ask them anonymously on your behalf, so you can ask whatever is relevant here, and if it's going to be of interest to the broader audience, I'll do my best to get it addressed by our outstanding panel here. You know, a couple of themes that I really heard from you on this were, first of all, doing things that you can do in a practical, easy sort of format without a lot of cost. Another was the whole idea of really leveraging and working with other organizations in the community. So it's not all about what the city is doing, but how the city is partnering. And then the third was, I think, the very important one that you demonstrated with your example of the blackface incident and the road rage, was how you stepped up as a city to take leadership when, you know, it could have been an option for somebody not to have done so, and really applaud you for doing that. And if you didn't earn the ICMA Diversity and Inclusion Award for what you'd already done, you certainly deserve it for how you stepped up in that challenging situation. So thanks for all that you're doing to help move this topic forward in an effective way. So let's take a look at how the suggestions from our audience, from Bridget, resonated for our audience. And here are the results coming up on the screen. So see a lot of things about looking at the commissions and committees and their representativeness. That's an important arena, surveying the residents, using existing events. I thought your idea about the new resident open house was also an interesting one, of kind of letting people know what community they're coming into and how this community works. So that's great. We have a follow-up question here from our audience about the commission and committees being representative of the community. Is it required by ordinance that those commissions and boards be reflective of the community, or how do you operationalize your intention about having your commissions and committees representative?
It is not reflected in our municipal code. I believe, if memory serves me correctly, it is reflected in our guidelines for diversity and inclusion, and it's really just a conscientious effort on behalf of the mayor and staff, and even other board members, to examine, for example, where people live, where their geography is in the community. So are all areas of the community being represented, maybe their age, their gender. So it's more about that selection process than it is a formal checklist.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Bridget, for your very helpful information here, and we'll be coming back to you for some comments later in
thank
the discussion.
You.
And we want to move now to Maria Hurtado. And Maria, we're very interested in hearing your story about Hayward and what you're learning and the resources that are available to help people in other communities to benefit from all the work that you've done.
Right at the beginning.
Maria, I can't hear you. I think you're on mute.
Can you hear me, Don?
Yes. Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much, Don. I really appreciate the opportunity to share some of the case studies we have here in Hayward. And I wanted to just let you know, during my presentation, I will be sharing three sets of examples on how Hayward is encouraging inclusive communities along with hopefully one lesson learned after each example. So I can share some of the nuggets of knowledge that we've learned over our experiences. And then I will end my presentation with some key takeaways that I hope will be useful to you. Before I get started, I'd like to share demographic information about Hayward. Hayward is a city located in Alameda County in the East Bay subregion of the San Francisco Bay Area. Hayward has a population of 150,000 and is the sixth largest city in the Bay Area and the third largest city in Alameda County, following Oakland and Fremont. Hayward is the second most diverse city in California and ranks third in the U.S. among the most ethnically and linguistically diverse cities. 58% of the population in Hayward speaks a language other than English, and almost 39% were born in a country outside the U.S. And as you can see on this slide, Hispanic Latinx is the largest racial and ethnic community in Hayward at 41%, followed by Asian Americans at 26%. There is diversity even within the various ethnic groups. As an example, the Asian community covers over a dozen distinct groups with different experiences and cultures. These differences bring different expectations of government, different income and educational levels, immigration statuses, which really requires that we be more thoughtful about these differences as we strive to be inclusive in our service delivery and engagement efforts. Now, I'd like to begin my presentation with the work we did with a community task force, which also led to the development of the Police Chiefs Advisory Panel. In early 2017, after the election of President Trump, segments of the community became concerned about how the perceived anti-immigration national discourse would affect our local immigrant community, particularly as it relates to ICE, which is the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arm of the federal government, and their presence here in Hayward. These concerns created a push that council declare Hayward a sanctuary city. But at that time, the council wanted to better understand what this declaration meant for the city, particularly around our federal funding, as it was rumored at the time that sanctuary cities could lose federal funding, and the city received millions of dollars through the Department of Justice and community block grant money. And to have a better understanding of the community concerns and the implications of being a sanctuary city, the council formed a community task force to assist the city to update the 1992 Anti-Discrimination Action Plan. The process of selecting the 21 community members included referrals from each of the seven council members, who were ultimately selected by the city manager and the mayor. The task force members were not only ethnically diverse, but also included age diversity, community activists, and folks who wanted to shape the recommendations coming out of this process. Hayward ultimately did declare itself a sanctuary city, but the task force really played a leadership role in facilitating a number of listening sessions in the community that were designed to obtain the insights and experiences of a wide variety of community members about current human relations issues. And the information they gathered really significantly influenced the content of the updated plan. One of the first things we did as we began our work with the task force was to jointly develop a charter. I've attached a link to the charter, and I must say that the charter development process from the very beginning was extremely helpful to ensure everyone's expectations were expressed, discussed, and ultimately clarified and agreed upon. The charter outlined the task force members' roles and responsibilities, the staff liaison's role, the time commitment necessary to update the plan, how the community conversations would take place, and a proposed timeline and so forth, which was very helpful. I wanted to show you this picture here on this slide, on the bottom center of the slide, which shows the City of Hayward population signs. Each entryway into the city has this welcome to Hayward and no room for racism sign. This signage was developed over 25 years ago when the 1992 Anti-Discrimination Action Plan I referenced was created. And that was created in response to then a community concern and uprise about the KKK group in Castro Valley, which is an adjacent city to us. I've been with the City of Hayward 2.5 years, and when I learned about this history and the responsiveness demonstrated by the city, I was even more excited to join the organization that was, you know, really open to these statements of inclusiveness. And I just have to share the picture with you. Anyway, the task force held numerous community conversations in different parts of the city. They completed surveys at the Saturday farmers markets, at various community events. Equally important, the task force itself had many conversations with the police department and staff about their concerns, resulting in a forum where both city staff and community task force members listened and learned from each other. One of the things the task force wanted to create was access to information about resources for undocumented residents that also included messages from the police chief related to the police department's policy on how they interacted with ICE and what they would and would not do when ICE came into our community. And so a robust web page was created on our city's website that included information on various educational forums that either the city was holding or not our nonprofit partners were holding. And I've also included a link to that page so you can access the information in more detail. Now, this work was not without its sticking points, and we learned that oftentimes we hear things that we may not be ready to hear. One example was the task force concerns with some of the training our public safety officers attended. For those of you who may not know, Urban Shield is a regional first responder training conference that includes training exercises for local law enforcement and fire personnel. The community had expressed concerns about the militarization of police, particularly some of the SWAT-focused training exercises. Now, this dialogue required longer conversations of sharing perspectives, learning, and educating each other. And the police department heard the community concerns, and the community listened to the police and fire explain the value of having interagency coordination and common training. So this dialogue was really helpful at the end of the day, but it took some time. Another example was the community's desire to establish a police oversight committee. The task force wanted to participate in shaping the structure and defining their charge. Ultimately, through extensive dialogue with the police department, a police chief's advisory panel was agreed upon instead of a police oversight committee, and there's a big difference. But these conversations and the compromise it took really did take a lot longer than we anticipated. So as a result, the task force helped create the document where the community advisory panel's membership roles and responsibilities were jointly developed. I say all that to say that inclusive engagement takes time. We initially created the task force for 1 year, but as you can see by this timeline, it took more than double that amount of time of regular meetings and allowing time to address the community's concerns. We realized that building relationships of trust under certain circumstances like the one I just described doesn't happen overnight. And part of that really requires humility on our part and a willingness to listen and compromise. Now, you can find the updated plan that was accepted by the council on this webpage link. I'd like to point out that language and use of words were very important to some of the task force members. And so they ultimately renamed the 1992 Anti-Discrimination Action Plan the Commitment for an Inclusive, Equitable, and Compassionate Community, which we refer to as the Commitment. This framework and action plan now serves to guide the city through a set of initiatives developed by the task force. I've also included a link to a video we developed that highlights the work the community task force did. Don mentioned that the city received the 2017 Local Government Hispanic Network Civic Engagement Award, which we're very happy about, and also the 2018 League of California Cities Award for the advancement of diverse communities, and I think the video is a fun one to watch. Now, in California, the passage of SB 1421, which is a legislation that now allows the release of peace officer records, including body-worn camera footage, has really created a whole new level of transparency that is affecting our city as we speak, because this legislation just passed recently. And just to give you an idea, we had an officer-involved shooting in November where a 29-year-old man died. And rather than only releasing the body-worn camera footage, the police department prepared this video where additional information was also released, including video footage from a street camera, audio from the 911 call, and other information to provide more context, really, so the public had information to understand the circumstances under which this officer-involved shooting took place. And although the district attorney's office just last week released the findings of the criminal investigation, which determined no wrongdoing by the officers, we have been experiencing presence of over 100 protesters from not only Hayward, but from the Oakland, Berkeley, and Sacramento area, who have been showing up to some of our council meetings over the last several months, demanding another independent investigation. This is one of the first things the police chief's advisory panel is going to tackle now that the panel is formed.
So we're going to go now to a polling question. We're turning now to a polling question. So we're interested, as the panelists continue to share with you their perspectives and ideas and experiences, we want to know what issues of inclusion are of particular interest to you and your agency at this time. So we ask you to tick off as many as are important to you. And while that's going on, Maria, we've got a couple of questions here that I'm going to cover with you. One is a question around how has the effort that you've had with regard to ICE and your sanctuary city issue, et cetera, negatively impacted the community, if at all? Is ICE responding, this person's asking, with targeting the community with increased enforcement or presence? How are you kind of navigating and working in that context? Maria, are you there? Can't hear you.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, now we can.
Okay, am I ready to continue?
Yeah, well, I was just asking you a question coming from the polling, from questions that people are entering. That is, they were asking, has there been some blowback about the actions with regard to Sanctuary City, et cetera, and ICE and such? And if so, how are you handling the relationships with that agency?
No, that's a really good question. And it was really important, I think, for us to have those community conversations because, first of all, we had to dispel that being a sanctuary city doesn't necessarily prevent ICE from coming here, and it's not like a blanket sanctuary. And there was a lot of dialogue around that. And I think the main concern the community had was, well, what's the police department's role in working with ICE. And we made it clear that our police officers are not immigration officers, and so we don't help or deport undocumented workers. That's ICE's job. And so we did a lot of education around that. And lastly, on the Sanctuary City Declaration, we ended up not losing the federal dollars, but I think the council wanted to wait a few months just to ensure that that wasn't going to be the case, and we didn't lose any dollars.
Okay. So we can see from our audience here that there's a lot of interest around how to invite input from diverse demographic groups and ways to foster greater understanding. And we've got a question that came in that maybe you can reflect on, Maria, as you continue on with your presentation. An interest in understanding what role does the professional staff, the city manager, you as assistant city manager, and others play in this, and how do you interact with these task forces? People are wanting to understand, you know, what is the leadership role of local government professionals in helping their communities navigate this? What do you actually do? So let's try to address that as you go through and discuss the particular lessons learned and other things that you've been working on.
Thank you, Don. I wanted to end this segment of my presentation with sharing with you one of the lessons learned. And one of the lessons learned during this experience, working with the community task force, and really the controversy around the development of the police chief's advisory panel, is that first, inclusive engagement takes time, and we must be prepared to be challenged. The other lesson learned is that inclusive engagement is also ongoing. Community concerns or issues will arise, as I mentioned with the officer-involved shooting a bit ago, and we have to be prepared for continuous community dialogue and engagement. So it doesn't end right when, you know, we complete a project. The second set of examples I'd like to talk to you about involves a partnership between the city and Chabot College, which is in South Hayward, on a service learning project, and also some examples of how the city has arranged the city's business around people's lives. South Hayward is an area where predominantly people of color live in our community, and where some residents feel that historically they have not received the same level of services and investments as, say, the downtown, where we've invested millions of dollars over the years. The city partnered with a community college located in South Hayward to offer students from this area a service learning opportunity who engage community members to understand their vision for the Tennyson area, which is also in South Hayward. That feedback was incorporated into the Tennyson visioning plan that we developed, which we had never done before. This work also resulted in a community art exhibit at City Hall showcasing the students' work, which you can see on this slide. And it was a successful partnership that we had previously not explored. This slide shows examples of the mayor and the city manager facilitating meetings in neighborhoods to discuss community concerns and answer questions. And this also speaks to the question that was asked by the audience a little while ago. At the community task force members, the mayor and the city manager, as well as myself, we attended every community task force meetings. And so I think the role key leadership play is very important, because I think our mayor and our city manager and the city manager's office involvement and engagement when we have some of these difficult conversations is really critical and makes a big difference. But back to the slide, we've held stakeholder meetings at local nonprofits like La Familia Counseling Center, which is highlighted here, and in local churches when we have weekend meetings where we offer childcare and food to get residents' feedbacks on various projects. In some instances, we send interdisciplinary staff teams to do door-to-door outreach using a lean innovation methodology before we start a new program. And in this particular case, we sought feedback on crime prevention programs that we plan to roll out. And after speaking with residents, we discovered that housing affordability was a more pressing concern for them, and they preferred information and resources related to housing options or tenant rights rather than crime prevention programs. One of the lessons learned with these examples was that when we meet people where they are and we go to them, we find out what their concerns and priorities are. And doing this before implementing programs we think they need is crucial. Engaging stakeholders before spending thousands of dollars in a solution that has not been vetted with the community is a key step towards inclusive engagement, because our solution may not be what they're looking for. The last example I'd like to end my presentation with is the work that we've begun with GARE, which stands for Government Alliance on Racial Equity. The city joined this national network that creates local and regional alliances, whose model focuses on these six strategic areas listed on this slide. The city's goal is to develop a diversity and equity and inclusion strategy. And we'll be utilizing GARE as a model when we begin this work. And we're right in the middle of it. We are currently focusing on strategies 1 and 2 listed here, beginning with a one-year training series around what it means to become change agents for racial justice and equity in our community. 15 of our city employees are going through the GARE training this year. We are also in the process of developing an action plan for the city that begins with employee engagement efforts to discuss and answer the questions that are listed on this slide. See, over the last couple of years, most departments have completed implicit bias trainings, and the city has undertaken other standalone efforts, but we really want to be more intentional about our goal, which is to develop a cohesive equity and inclusion strategy that builds upon the work that we've already done, including the work that the task force put together in the commitment document. We've identified actually these five focus areas for this coming year, and are beginning with a focus on increasing organizational capacity to grow our employees' understanding of why this work is important. Another area identified as a priority and an internal opportunity to ensure we reach, attract, and diversify our applicant pool is to examine our processes around hiring, recruitment, and retention of employees. Evaluating our hiring and promotion processes, where we advertise to fill vacancies, examining our application and testing processes, who sits on the interview panels, all of this will help us analyze any potential unintentional systemic barriers that may exist. And we have quite a bit of work to do still in this area. I wanted to give you an example. When we recently shared the diversity stats with the organization's management team, some reaction involved questions related to whether we were now moving towards having quotas and overlooking qualifications altogether. And I believe this reaction in part had some to do with us not communicating why we were tracking this information in the first place. Excuse me. And what we really were trying to accomplish by doing so, I'm going to have to take a quick sip. My apologies. But our goal is to develop a citywide initiative that really shifts the internal culture towards equity and inclusion, that builds staff capacity to understand and employ an equity lens across the organization and in how we do our business. Because really the bottom line is that working in a city as diverse as Hayward, it is important that we understand how to serve and engage our community in the best way that we can. Therefore, one of the lessons learned in this last example was that in order to accomplish this, we need to engage our employees in the conversations about why the development of a diversity, equity, and inclusive strategy is important. But to do that requires that we provide the space and opportunity for meaningful dialogue, and most importantly, allow the time it takes for folks to share their perspectives, whatever that might be. Finally, I've listed some of the key takeaways we learned through the work I shared with you today. First, it is important that we understand the unique composition and experiences of our community. Second, the inclusive engagement takes time, and we must be prepared to be challenged. Third, we had to meet people where they are. Fourth, this work, in order for it to be sustainable and meaningful, we must address the structural and cultural barriers in our own organizations. And finally, that any internal effort we embark in within our organization to do that will require employee engagement, space for dialogue, and permission to share perspectives. Included in your packet is an article entitled Stop Hiring for a Culture Fit. And I also included the application we submitted for the Civic Engagement Award if you want to take a look at some of the more details related to the Community Task Force. And on this slide, I've also added two links of additional resources that I hope you find helpful. And thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Maria. We've got a bunch of questions that have come in, and we also want to get to a polling question here. There's a number of suggestions that you have offered on how to move forward in this arena. We're interested in having our audience be active learners here and give some reaction to the things that they think would be desirable for their agency to be pursuing. So we ask you to take a moment to click off as many of the items there as you think would be helpful for your agency to give attention to as you go forward. And while that's going on, I want to cover some of the questions that are coming in here. And one of the issues is, how are you looking at the issue, or are you considering issues of economic inclusion and expansion for targeted communities? Is that a part of your focus?
So far, because we're at the beginning stages of it, it really is around, like I mentioned, South Hayward is an area that typically is a low-income community, and so we're doing more outreach based on that kind of census data. So we're trying to incorporate it now. When I talk about putting your lens, economics is part of it as well, because it speaks to the investment the city puts into different segments of the community.
Okay. And we've got a couple of questions that are going to be teed up, and we'll be sharing over with Preeti, because she's got some particular information on how do you address language differences and how do you address some of these economic topics, because those are some things that Renton has been addressing. So we're going to continue that discussion in a moment, but let's take a look at how our poll went here and what we can learn from it. So we see lots of interest in addressing the structural and cultural barriers, meeting people where they are, and understanding the patience and the robust engagement that's needed to bring your employees forward in this discussion and in a constructive way. So lots of things of value here from your presentation. Maria, we really appreciate the thoughtfulness in your preparation and your provision of lots of resources, and we're hopeful that people will take advantage of those as they go forward and see how they can build off of the learnings of other communities like Baltimore, like Hayward, and as you'll be hearing, like Renton. So we'll move Preeti forward here for the presentation purposes and close our poll and move forward with the next section here. So Preeti Sridhar, delighted to have you here with us today, representing the city of Renton and the initiatives that you're undertaking, and look forward to hearing your story about the opportunities for communities to be intentional in being inclusive.
It's my pleasure. Hope my voice is coming through. I will say that I was suffering from a bit of a cold over the weekend and was talking very little, so I could save it for today. Renton, a little bit about Renton. Renton is one of the suburban cities in the Seattle area. We are home of Boeing. We're also home of the Seattle Seahawks. And for those who are younger in the community, we are also where you have Dungeons and Dragons, Wizards of the Coast. And recently we had a big celebration here when there was the, was it the fifth season of Game of Thrones? Whatever. So there was a lot of excitement in our downtown. Like Maria, I will start a little bit with our demographics. Renton has seen a significant change in our community. Now, why is this not moving? Let's see here.
Put your cursor over that arrow, and I can advance it for you here, as I've just done.
Okay. Okay. So one of the things I wanted to start off in terms of inclusion and equity is to say that if you really want to be inclusive, if you really want to make a difference, it's got to be something that's got to be completely part of the fabric of what you do, not a program or an effort somewhere on the side. You've got to really make it part of your DNA. It's got to be the way you think and act, because at the end of the day, as city government, we are in the business of serving our community, and so it's got to be really, you know, part of everything that we do. And so when we looked at how things were changing in Renton, it was dramatic. It was significant. So, for instance, if you look at the changes in population, especially our minority population, you know, Seattle had, you know, between 2000 and 2010, you know, 13-14% changes. But look at Renton. You're talking 166%. That's huge. And then if you kind of go forward to 2019, you know, this pie chart shows 52%, but if you actually look closer, we are a minority-majority city. So that's a complete dramatic changeover in terms of who we are, in terms of our community. But looking internally, that's, you know, we're not able to keep pace with, you know, who we are in terms of our, you know, city employees, because, you know, things don't change that fast. Retirement doesn't happen that fast. Our structures, our systems don't change that fast. And, you know, that was something that we needed to address, and we needed to look at things. It's not a light switch that you turn on and turn off, and overnight you are able to adapt. Government is not known to be that adaptive. But at the end of the day, who are we? We're city local government serving our public. So we knew that we had to do things, you know, especially going back to that slide of it's got to be part of our DNA. This needed a lot of work, a lot of rethinking. And where do we start? How do we start? What do we do? What does inclusion mean? And that's really what, you know, we had to take a pause and say, okay, what do we do? And we started at the core. We started with our business plan. I think I can say with, you know, quite proudly that thanks to, you know, buy-in all the way from the top, from our city council and from our mayor, we changed our business plan. And this one-page document that you see here is the guiding principle that is really, you know, the guiding principle behind the city's comprehensive plan, our, you know, transportation plan, our parks plan. we changed the mission statement of the city's business plan and said that the city of Renton is going to build an inclusive and informed city with opportunities for all. And, you know, following this mission statement, we created goals that would include, you know, inclusion and equity as a clean and clear driver to within which every department would have, you know, guiding parameters to be inclusive. And we realize this is not going to happen overnight. This is going to take work. This is going to take work internally and externally. I'll walk through some of these things. There were baby steps, there were big steps. This is ongoing, but at least it's set in motion one very important thing, saying we're changing, we need to do things differently, we need to take a stock of things and start somewhere. So what does all that mean? First and foremost, we started externally. I'm going to pause and tell a little story here to put this all in context and give a little history behind the creation of this group and go from there. So, you know, at the inauguration of President Clinton, we had what was known as the inaugural day storm in the Pacific Northwest, where there was an awful windstorm, temperatures dropped, and about 500,000 homes in the area lost power. And what happened there was several people, especially those from different communities who had different language as an issue, brought their grill, their barbecue grill, into their homes as a source of heat. At that time, I was the communications director for Renton. We had a fire chief, and unfortunately, we had two cases of carbon monoxide poisoning in Renton and two fatalities. I remember, you know, calling the fire chief with tears, you know, pouring down my face to talk about this news. This was pre-Facebook, pre-social media, and, you know, using a dial tone phone to communicate because we didn't have language translations. We didn't have a way to communicate saying this is danger. And I then got an AmeriCorps intern to work for me, and part of the strategy was saying, go to the different groups, go to their events when they have their parties and find people in the different communities. Go to them. Don't ask them to come to these 5:30 open house meetings to City Hall. Nobody has the time to do that. Go to their events and communities and find the you know, key community leaders and create this group. We call them community liaisons and build connections with them so that through them, we can reach out to the different community members that make our city. And that was the beginning of, at that time, the community liaison. And today, they are the Mayor's Inclusion Task Force so that we have a way to communicate with members of our society who represent the different community groups, ethnic groups, faith leaders. And I'm moving this slide to the next one. And today we have, you know, 33 members. They represent the diversity of our community. They're ambassadors of the city. They work as advisors to the mayor. And essentially, they've become core, you know, messengers of their key issues. And they are ways that we reach out. And they are not just ethnic or diverse members, but they are youth, they are seniors, they are members from the LGBTQ community. Next Monday, for the first time in the history of Renton City Hall, we're going to be flying the Gay Pride flag. with help of members representing the LGBTQ community. For the first time this year, the Parks and Recreation Plan has input from members of each and every one of these members, because they took the plan out to their members to get input. So it's not the same old, you know, plan without input. And I could go on forever, because there's so much that we've grown as a city, because now we're really engaging our community. Anyway, so developing these strategic partnerships and empowering our community has been one of the most important parts of our efforts to be inclusive. Another part of it has been, it's not one size that fits all, even within our communities. And Maria touched upon this. Don had talked a little bit about different needs of our different communities, different income levels. So, for example, Renton is less, you know, the income levels in Renton is in an interesting place in the Seattle area. We're not as well off as some of our other, you know, communities like Bellevue or Redmond, but at the same time, the income levels are not as low as some of the other southern communities in you know, this part of the of King County. So similarly, some of our ethnic communities, some of them are actually very well off, but some of them are lower income communities. So their needs are also very different. So for example, we have some of the Chinese American communities in Renton. Their income levels are much higher than some of the African American communities in Renton. And as those are different, they also come with different needs, with different issues, and they learn from each other. This, these slides, these next two slides are primarily images, but when the first year that the Inclusion Task Force got together, they decided to have a social. This was all from them, and they said, we want to do this social, but here's what we want to do. We want to come together. Each one of us wants to bring 7-8 members from our community, but we don't want to be together. We want to be shuffled up, and we want to learn from each other, and we want to learn about each other's culture. Because they were so fascinating in finding out and discovering from each other. And that itself was so fascinating. Here's a little timeline on some of the things we did in terms of just our process and progress. We started with dedicated resources in the mayor's office in 2008. I mentioned the revision of the business plan. We did dedicate some consultant services in 2012. Consultant did citywide training, created an equity lens. We've done a lot of work in systematically reviewing policy. Some of the greatest changes in policy we've made is in terms of our hiring. In terms of our hiring policy, and all of this you will find available on our website, which I will refer you to. We changed and made anonymous all applications for recruiting. We also changed our panels, our questions for our panels. We've done a lot of work for police department, and I will get a little bit more into detail on that soon. And we are now going to be working on our vendor policy so that we can have better reflection on our vendors. And then we've also been looking at how we can look at citywide staffing and work so that we can integrate systems within city policies for better inclusion. And then, like I said, a lot of what we do as city is our services. So how can we change our systems to better externally reflect inclusion? So for example, we have speakers bureaus. A lot of this has been in the area of emergency management. We've done emergency preparedness kits. We worked with our fire department to do blood sugar and blood pressure screening. We had a whole emphasis on Renton Heart Month, lots in terms of communications, Facebook pages, working with our Mayor's Inclusion Task Force. We've done lots with languages. I will strongly encourage you to have the language line, very inexpensive, very easy to use. They will help provide training for all your staff on how to use the language line. They also have video sign language that they offer, and it's as simple as using it on an iPad. You can track the use of language line, only use as you need. So again, costs are simple. And you don't have to pay for print. Next slide. And then the working with the Inclusion Task Force is one way. Another very, very important thing about working with the community, it's about trust. It's about relationship. And here I want to spend a little time talking to you about getting into the, it's not one size that's fits all. And in today's world, when you're talking about public safety and the police department, why it's very, very important to work with your police department. I want to share a little bit about some of the things we've done on that front. Next slide. We have looked at specifically our community with the African American community. Also our Latino community and Vietnamese communities, because these are some of our communities where we've noticed that there's a lot of distrust with our police department and they have specific issues. After Ferguson, you know, there was a lot of distrust with the police department. So we worked with the Renton African American pastors and the police to develop a relationship with those communities. We also developed a relationship with the Latino community because they had distrust with the whole issue about immigration. So here I have, this is the African American community to work with, especially with youth and the police to see how they can better build relationships. We also, in fact, have a deputy chief who is African American. We also hired school resource officers and have held multiple forums at the schools, in the public, to start building partnerships with the youth and the police. To start addressing issues and building trust within this community. This falls under the umbrella of the Mayor's Inclusion Task Force, but specifically focuses on the African American community and education, conversations, and we've reached out to hundreds of youth and community members over the years. We've had a unity march every fall with the group, and the pastors have been instrumental in bridging this gap with the with their community to build the trust. Lots of examples where things could have gone out of proportion, could have hit the national news, but because of this relationship, we've really helped build the bridge. Festivals have really been a way to build, the bridges. We've done this in two ways. One is we've gone to the community where they've had the festivals and we've participated with the communities. This is a slide that shows the Sikh festival. Every year they have the Khalsa festival, and we've done this with every festival in the community. The second way we've done this is we've had an annual Renton Multicultural Festival where we've brought all the festivals together under one roof and celebrated together. The one difference between Renton's Multicultural Festival and other festivals that are celebrated all over the country is we've had kind of an integration and there's been a takeaway. So, you know, in Renton's Multicultural Festival, for instance, everybody goes away wearing a turban. There's origami that everyone helps, you know, create. Here are some slides of the, you know, police and the African-American community celebrating together. Next slide. We've worked very closely with the ethnic media in the community and making sure, again, that we're sharing and celebrating together. I personally have built strong relations with all the media. We're going to be having a very, very important article coming up with Crosscut, which is a strong media, political media presence here on our inclusion program soon. Next slide. The other thing is, you know, it's important for us to share our information with other local governments because we're all in this together. Today's webinar is a great example of us doing this across the nation, but even our regional partners here. Last year, we had, and Renton and King County were the two governments that got together to do this. We launched the first regional conference, Advancing for Racial Equity. We're doing this again this year. And what that helps us do is, first of all, not reinvent the wheel, share things together, host, you know, conferences like vendor conferences, and, you know, helps us to be innovative and inclusive together, you know, build structures together so that we have efficiencies there, do training together, bring speakers so that we can share the costs. Next slide. Here's slides of career fairs. We started a career fair saying, let's, you know, throw the net wide so we get good applicants. And now this has grown. And now we have wait lists for companies wanting to join our career fair because they know they get talented applicants and good companies with, you know, jobs that are there to, you know, attract the talent that we offer. Next slide. Sorry. Like I said, this we are now launching our vendor contracting. And here again, as we started looking at how come we don't have minority and women businesses, especially for professional contracting. Now, for the federal contracts, we do because there's a requirement. But for professional services, like architectural firms, or even small contracts such as, you know, food contracting, because oftentimes it's a project manager who calls the same consultant that they've used all the time. We found, for instance, in Renton that we have a business license that's required, but we did not have a question on our business license to find out how many minority and business firms we hire. So we changed the basic requirements so that we now can gather the data. We have training, and now we have mandatory training for every employee on race and implicit bias. And we've also started having community conversations with our public so that we can have informal sessions to offer those trainings. We've got a lot of awards, the most recent being the 2018 Public Relations Society of America Totem Award for our multicultural festival. One of the reasons we do apply for awards is it helps us put forward all the requirements we've put together to kind of articulate what we do, but it also helps us, you know, share with other cities what we've done so that others can, you know, take from our example. I put together a small punch list of, okay, what is it you've done? How can you go about taking this on? Because it's not that hard. You know, put that community liaison group together. You know, what are the things you can do to put an inclusion training program? The Seattle Times has a great model called Under Our Skin. You can use it. You can have a conversation, whether it's a brown bag lunch and learn with your employees or take it to a community conversation. The language line that I shared, it's easily available, and you can use it as you need it. So it doesn't have to be very expensive. GARE, Maria talked about it. They have different options available depending on what you want to use. And the next slide is a screenshot of our website. Please, you know, don't hesitate to take this. Go to our website, and all the resources are there available for you. Please feel free to copy, paste, use everything that will work for you, because the more you can incorporate into your efforts, the easier it is. And don't hesitate to contact me. My contact information is there. I'm always ready to help, because, the more inclusive you can be, the better you can serve your community. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Preeti. That's very interesting information, and you're highlighting here how being inclusive with your colleagues in other or local government organizations is an important step for building inclusivity, because you're building the capacity for people to share resources and to move forward. And that is a very robust website that she was referencing you to, and very worthwhile your time to take a look at it, because it has many, many resources there that you could look at and say, hey, what's relevant for us? What could we adapt and apply to help our community be inclusive and productive? So check off as many of the items as you heard as sort of key takeaways from Preeti that you think are relevant here for your agency at this point in time. And just a quick response, if you could, Preeti, on what is a citywide equity lens? Could you give just a quick definition of what you mean by that?
A citywide equity lens is essentially a set of system-wide questions that you pose on policies, guidelines of that you ask of principles, criteria, guidelines that you have to determine if your systems, your principles are being equitable, if they are in any way impacting a group, a community, or people negatively, one group or other negatively over another, or if there's any implicit bias in any system, and if there's anything that can be done to correct. And there are different lenses that are out there. There are different methods that you can adapt to see how best you can, adapt it for yourself. We looked at quite different ones and came up with one that's most appropriate for Renton. And again, it's there on the website, and you can take a look at it.
I think we need to turn to a few additional points here before we close out. But yes, there's a very good diagram of what an equity lens application is in Renton, and in the resource that Maria shared with you from Tacoma on doing hiring and recruitment through an equity lens. That's a good handbook resource of how at least Tacoma applied that. So lots of useful ideas there. So what I want to do now is just highlight a few things. Of course, most importantly is what you and your community are going to be doing and in your organization to address these questions. So we always have for our webinars, post-webinar discussion questions. We encourage you to take some time after this session or soon after to really have some discussion. What do we want to take away from this? What can we be applying? What are some early wins we can achieve in helping to move forward inclusion in our community? There's a series of things that I wanted to highlight here. There's also lots of resources from the coaching program, and those will also be available in the follow-up email that will go out to you. We do want, while we're covering a few more points, cover our last polling question here on how the webinar was of value to you and to your agency, or your agency as the case may be. And click off as many areas as you found useful. We certainly wanted to help in your learning about what is happening, but gaining ideas and exploring approaches and figuring out ways to be inclusive internally and externally. And then I know the presenters worked very hard with me on identifying resources that would help you launch your efforts forward. So want to see, you know, to the degree to which these things have helped and resonated for you. A quick question here, and it's coming back to the internal side of things. Maybe, Maria, you spoke of it some. You could address it, but any of you. How did you address employee morale when inclusivity changes disrupted previous processes and expectations? Maybe, Maria, you've got a quick comment and a quick comment from Preeti on that one.
I'm trying to think of... Go ahead, Preeti.
We've had situations of morale, especially externally. It's not so much employee morale. I can speak to a situation where this happened. In fact, there was an African-American youth who was working, and there was a change in a security guard, and he was working a night shift. The security guard did not know that he was legally working, and so he called the police, and the police came and arrested him. And then it was all cleared up, but obviously the young lad was very disturbed because he was rightfully at the place of work but was arrested. Fortunately, because of the relationship that we had with the Renton African American pastors, you know, it was all very properly handled. And the good news was, because it was because of the relationship, you know, the police were able to talk to his parents, the community. And, you know, it did not blow up. It did not become a media issue. It did not become what it could have been, which we know in today's volatile world, it could have just got dragged on and been something which could have been unpleasant and left very unfortunate, bitter mark on everybody. Everyone,
let me just interject here because we're running short on time, and I think this is a theme that each of you has highlighted, and that is making an investment as local government professionals in helping to build the capacity of your community to have these kinds of inclusive discussions, inclusion task forces, whatever format and approach you take, is really a critical infrastructure investment for your community, because it's your best way to help diffuse situations that could otherwise, without that groundwork, really get blown out of proportion, as well as it's being the right thing to do. So lots of important reasons to go forward with this. And I'm seeing from the polling results here that people got value out of this in many ways. So I really want to thank our panelists for that. And bringing them back, I'd like to just turn in to each and ask for a very brief comment, a word, a phrase, takeaway that you'd like to offer. We'll begin with Bridget, we'll go to Maria, and then to Preeti. And if you would, just a word, phrase, comment that you'd like to leave your audience with. Bridget.
Well, I think, you know, my observation from hearing everybody's presentation today is that whether you're a small community or a large community, I think we're all facing some of these same challenges. And even though I didn't talk specifically about some of the internal employee challenges, we've continued to experience those as well. So I think there's some commonality across all of the cities in the challenges and opportunities that we're facing. And so it's great that we've had a forum to be able to bring this conversation together.
Great, Bridget. Maria.
Yeah, no, I think Bridget is right on. The one thing I wanted to point out was every community is different, and depending on where you're from, you may have different challenges, even though the challenges all feel very similar. And so I think really understanding what challenges you want to tackle in your own respective community, whether it's inclusion related to age, ethnic diversity, gender, whatever the case may be, I think getting started is the most important thing.
Super. And Preeti, quick closing word.
I think this is it's a journey. It's a process. I think what you'll find most validating is that the community, when you work with them, they're working with you. It's a family that you gain. And it really is, the payback is amazing. So it's really worth it to kind of work together because it's gaining a family.
Well, super. Well, thank you very much. And this is Don Maruska, director of the ICMA coaching program, thanking you all as our audience and giving the attention that you have to this topic today. It's an important one for the fabrics of our communities to thrive by being inclusive, and we really encourage you to take the time with your colleagues to share the resources from today's webinar, to be exploring what you can do in steps along the way to help make your community a more rich and vibrant and inclusive fabric for our society. Thanks so much, and we hope that you'll join us on future webinars. We're eager to have your participation on all of these topics and welcome your ideas and questions and thoughts in the follow-up survey after the webinar. Please take a couple moments to share those with us. We appreciate all that you're doing in the profession and helping to make it great. We look forward to your work and any ways that we can, through the ICMA coaching program, support you and your organizations and your careers. Thanks so much.
Thank you.